The following is the audio version of a video released at peakprosperity.com. Visit peakprosperity.com to watch the video and to find other insightful content such as articles, discussion forums, and exclusive subscriber-only content.
The official story of Charlie Kirk's public execution slash murder is that Tyler Robinson, acting alone, used his grandfather's old Mauser Model 98 30-06 from the roof of a place called the Losey Building at UVU, sending a single round 140 yards into Charlie's neck, where the bullet somehow took a hard pivot and went down into Charlie's body instead of exiting out the back of his neck. Today, I am going to prove that this story is so unbelievable as to be insulting.
In America.
Hello, everyone. Dr. Chris Martinson here from Peak Prosperity. Just getting myself set in here. This is going to be a big romp. We're going to be pushing into this special investigation because, you know, there's a lot of theories out there as to what happened to Charlie Kirk. I think we owe it to him. We owe it to ourselves. We owe it to everybody to find out exactly what happened. And the official story is that he was shot with a 30-06 by someone from the spot up there on the Losey Building. And I can prove to you today that that's just not true. Now, I had a hypothesis born from a long time being a gun shooter that a 30-06 round was not going to be stopped by going into Charlie's neck. And in particular, I think what we have to confront here is, well, what's the actual evidence telling us? So that's what we did. The Peak Prosperity team, Nick on the team, and Barry on the EDA team, we went ahead and we conducted experiments. And we conducted experiments shooting into things that would most carefully mimic a human neck with a 30-06, filmed it from two directions. I'll show you the whole setup. Spoiler alert, not one of these bullets was stopped by even a solid leg bone in the center of a pork roast. So we'll get to all of that data, but first, what's the setup? Remember, Charlie's seat was more or less exactly straight under the apex of this tent. The tent was orthogonal to the overall venue, and Charlie was sitting square to that, so we have really good lineups so that we can say what happened. Allegedly, this is where the shot was taken from, and we're going to talk about the official story relating to this spot. You can sort of see there's some indents there, and some crime scene tape up here, and a few crime scene markers, but you can sort of squint, you can see the indents right there. Those are supposed to be, I don't know, elbows and knees from somebody lying in a prone position. I don't dispute that somebody was lying in a prone position, but I do dispute that they took the shot that killed Charlie. Now, this would have been the shot. It's about 140 yards right from here to here. I don't think this gets in the way right here. Looks like a fairly clean shot from here to here, if that's where the shot was taken from. Now, my problem with this shot was always this. That person is in a slightly elevated position, so they're shooting down at a 10-degree angle. And also, they're not directly in front of Charlie, so they're off to the side by about a 10-degree angle. We can line those 10-degree angles up and find if we were had a shot coming in off-axis by about 10 degrees, coming into Charlie's throat, excuse me, right there, because it came in to the side a little bit, then it would have just gone straight through, and it would have even missed the human cervical spine area, which, by the way, these are weak bones. Human neck bones are not the strongest bones out there, as anybody can tell you who's broken one of them. They are pretty chintzy bones in the scheme of things. They are in no way comparable, say, to an elk leg bone or a pig forearm bone, which is what we're going to be shooting through today in the experiments. But I just want to make sure that we understand what's going on here. And by the way, this is a cross-section of the human neck right about at the C6, C7, which is the lower cervical bone area there. And somewhere between the C6, C7 bone, if this shot came in at about a 10-degree angle, it would have missed everything. It would have mainly gone through muscle. So that's why we're going to use pork roast, because we think that most carefully mimics the muscle structure that you would find in a human neck. This is where the bullet would have gone. For it to go into the body, we have to believe it would have done two things. It would have had to take a hard turn in towards the center of the body and then been impressed by or stopped by these bones here enough to get deflected down into the body, and we're going to show that that's just not a realistic possibility here. So the official story, let's make sure we're all squared up. This is the official story. Here's what actually happened. So this comes from Tyler Robinson's arrest affidavit of probable cause issued by the state of Utah. They are charging him with aggravated murder, felony discharge of a firearm causing serious bodily injury, and obstruction of justice, capital first-degree felony conduct. So those are the three charges against him. And here's the story that's been presented. They say here, well, Charles was holding a microphone, speaking to a crowd. While speaking into the microphone, a loud gunshot was heard at approximately 12:23 hours, so 12:23 in the afternoon. And he appears to have been hit in the neck. Blood came out of the left side. He fell over. He's transported to the hospital, declared dead. The suspect, they say down here, appears to walk with a stiff right leg and at a relatively slow pace. Suspect's ability to bend his right leg appears to be restricted. Investigators are able to track suspect's movements on the UVU campus starting at approximately 11:50 on the 10th of September. So 11:50, he's being tracked. He's limping. His right leg is stiff, awkwardly. So presumably the gun is shoved down that pant leg. Not in those photos they showed us of somebody walking up the stairwell. That person was bending both knees. So I wish they would release this footage. Then we could take an assessment of it, but they have not. Carrying on, they said, okay, well, first at 11:50, a surveillance camera captured suspect walking across a grassy area north of Campus Drive, approximately 800 West. He then walked south through the parking lot, approached the pedestrian tunnel that runs underneath Campus Drive. Before entering the tunnel, suspect paused at the top of the stairs and pulled out what appeared to be a cell phone from his right pocket using his right hand at approximately 11:53. Suspect eventually put what appeared to be a cell phone back in his right pants pocket using his right hand. Surveillance captured suspect making his way towards the Losi Center. So at 12:02, suspect's on the north side of the building, walking with the same gait as observed earlier, stiff right leg. Suspect entered the Losi Center building through a set of doors on the southeast corner. At 12:15, walking upstairs that lead to the common area adjacent to the Losi Center building, suspect walked to a short concrete wall that separates the common area from the rooftop. And at 12:17, he climbed over the short wall and appeared to crouch down on the north side of the wall. So we don't know what happens there. Maybe, you know, gets out of sight of the cameras, pulls the gun out, reassembles it, I'm guessing at this point is going to be the official story. And at approximately 12:22, suspect stood up and started running across the rooftop of the Losi building. So this is interesting, because at 12:23 is when Charlie's shot. So at 12:22, the suspect's going to have to get up, get into a shooting position, crouch down, dial in, take the shot, and run, all within a minute or possibly 2 minutes if it was at the beginning of 12:22 and then at the end of 12:23. They say here the notable limp from previous surveillance was absent. Suspect ran to the west side of the rooftop and appeared to scoot along the rooftop area as he got closer to the edge of the rooftop. At approximately 12:22, suspect laid down in a position consistent with a prone shooting position near the edge of the rooftop and appeared to be facing west in the direction of the courtyard area. The rooftop of the Losi Center building overlooks the courtyard area where the event featuring Charlie Kirk was taking place. Okay. And at approximately 12:23, Charlie was shot. Note, they don't mention here that they have any evidence. Video shows subject taking a shot. They've got video. They haven't shown us that. They've shown us the video after the shot of a subject getting up and running away, but we haven't seen any video of somebody taking a shot, which with a 30-06, there's a good chance if you had a decent camera, you're going to see that because those things give a little bit of a punch to the shoulder area. All right. So, and then at 12:23, suspect stands up suddenly from the edge of the rooftop, sprints north, ran to the northeast corner, drops down, runs across the grassy area. And then they say here, the area to the north of Campus Drive Road, where suspect crossed over, consists of a grassy area with trees on the edge of the UVU campus. Investigators discovered a bolt action rifle wrapped in a dark colored towel. The rifle was determined to be a Mauser model 30-06 caliber bolt action rifle. It had a scope mounted on top of it, noted inscriptions that have been engraved on the casings found with the rifle. Inscriptions on a fired casing read, "Notices bulge, OWO, what's this?" Inscriptions on three unfired casings read various things. So, a fired round in the chamber. Three more unfired rounds with things written on them. Now, this is odd because We don't know what ammunition it was yet. Nobody's released any photos of this, not even of what we think is the actual rifle used, certainly not wrapped in a towel, no crime scene photos. We have a photo of a gun in a evidence box of some kind, but not the towel, and certainly no images of the cartridges. And I've called for this publicly several times. If you could just show us the cartridges, particularly the head stamp, which is on the back end of a live round here. This is a live round. If you could show us that, then we can know exactly what the ammunition was. We didn't have that information. We still don't. So we're having to guess a little bit here, and we had to run a much more extensive set of experiments because we don't know what round was used. Now, when they want to, they'll show you the cartridges. These were cartridges with stuff written on them that Kash Patel freely shared out after the ICE facility shooting. Nobody seemed to care about that. Possibly because the subject in that shooting was already dead, and they're trying to preserve a live courtroom situation for Tyler Robinson, I guess, maybe. But again, we're being withheld some very, very basic information. So let's go to the experimental setup, then we'll get to the experiment itself. So here's the experimental setup. First, we bought 8 roasts. They were boneless, 2 boneless pork roasts over here, weighing in at about 5 pounds each, a little over 5 pounds. We had bone-in pork picnic. This is the pork picnic. It's right here. This is I've got a very stout bone in the center of it because this is obviously the leg here of the supporting the weight of these pigs, which can be considerable. And so we bought 5 bone-in pork picnics, and then and so that's what we did. And then we had a combination where we stacked them all up and tried to shoot through all of them. And then each of these was shot with various ammunitions, and we had the diameters we thought we wanted to get. We wanted to get these pork picnics that would sort of resemble a human neck, right? That's a picnic roast right there. And again, it has this big bone it has to support. But when we measured the, you know, what's an average man's, I have a comfy shirt for me is 17 inches. I'm going to guess Charlie was a little bit larger than me. So we bought pork roasts that were sort of 17, 16 and a half inches, 19, 18, 19 and a half, 20, 17. So these are things that are as large or possibly larger than a human neck. So we're trying to recreate as carefully as possible the conditions of a human neck to see what happens when you shoot a variety of different 30-06 rounds at it under a variety of conditions. That was experiment one. Experiment two, we have gel blocks that we set up to show the cavitation event because we're trying to recreate what happened to Charlie's necklace flying off and to his shirt puffing out. Could we do that? But first, we're going to go through just can something that mimics as carefully as possible a human neck, can it actually stop a 30-06 round? And first, we started with these boneless pork roasts, boneless because our trajectory at a 10-10 angle says that round was going to go clean through Charlie's neck. It wouldn't have encountered a bone. There would have been no way for it to encounter a bone. So we wanted to find out, A, do these things penetrate all the way through? And B, did any of them deflect? Like, did they hit this thing and come out some weird place that we didn't expect, which would be consistent with the idea that you could get shot and the bullet could take a turn? That's not really very likely, and I'll tell you why later. So again, this is what a pork picnic roast looks like, bone in. This is with it, with the bone out. It just, they've taken the bone out, but it very clearly does a good job of mimicking a human neck. The range, we had about a 10 degree angle down. We were shooting from 100 yards, not 140 yards. And that's because that was kind of the limit of where this range could actually support. So we're a little bit shorter, but it's pretty close. We were using a Remington 700 bolt action 30-06 to as closely as possible mimic the velocities you would expect from a bolt action rifle, which is very different from, say, a semi-automatic rifle, because that uses a lot of the power of the cartridge to cycle the next round, and bolt action puts everything it's got into that round and off it goes. And you can see here we're using sandbags and braces and all kinds of things just to make sure we had as clean a shot as possible. And here's a view looking down towards where the targets, you can see 2 cameras down here. And so we had a GoPro and a Xiaomi over here. These were the cameras that we used. This is a GoPro Hero 12 Black. It's capable of shooting at 260 frames per second, so we use that. And this is the Xiaomi 15 Ultra, which has these beautiful Leica lenses in it and is capable of shooting at 460 frames per second without totally breaking the bank. We used a variety of ammunitions. We used this is 150 grain. It's a full metal jacket. Comes out at 2,740 feet per second at the muzzle. And it has 2,118 foot pounds of force at 100 yards. We also used 180 grain bolt tail hollow point. This is these things have the ballistic tips, and they behave really. This is really terminal kind of stuff. This is coming out at 2,675 feet per second, and it has 2,480 foot pounds of pressure of energy at 100 yards. And then we also used these 220 grain soft points. They're coming out at 2,410 feet per second at the muzzle, and they have 2,216 foot pounds of energy at 100 yards. And they should do a pretty good job of mushrooming. These behave like hollow points. They're going to absolutely mushroom out as much as they can, as fast as they can. What we didn't have, and we're still trying to source this, I wish we could be using this, something specialty like this 110 grain 30-06 stuff. That comes out at an astonishing 3,400 feet per second. It's got that ballistic tip. It's a very, very light, 110 grains is a very light round. So it's blazing fast. It has just this massive 2,823 foot pounds of energy. So maybe that would behave differently. We've got this on order because this is the only stuff we could find, which is this custom light Hornady. This is called reduced recoil ammunition. It's kind of loaded down. 30-06 round is a little punishing on the shoulder. And so they've reduced it. So this thing is coming out kind of slow with not a lot of energy. So maybe a slower round could behave differently when it hits a pork roast. We'll figure that out. And then we could get this, the Remington Core-Lock 125 grains. That's coming. And that's just a jacketed soft point. But again, that soft point should mushroom pretty quickly. And that one's blazing hot as well. But I hope we can find this somewhere. And so we're looking around to see if we can get there. So before we move on, I just want to let you know that I've had a lot of experience shooting. So that's why immediately I was able to call BS on this idea that Charlie was shot in the front of the neck here at a 10 degree angle, and that that round, any 30-06 round, would be stopped by his neck. So let me just give you a little primer for those of you who don't know. Okay, so this is a 22, right? The 22 round, it's one of the smallest rounds you can get. It could still be deadly if it was shot at a vital part, but it's a little tiny thing. It has a 55 grain bullet on the tip of it here. And it travels just, I don't know, maybe 1,100 feet per second out of a rifle. So it's a very light round. Moving up the chain, we would then compare that to, say, a 9mm round for a pistol. The 9mm round has a lot more energy to it. It's going to have a lot more stopping power, meaning if you shoot somebody with it, they're going to notice. Not quite as much, though, is if they were being shot with this, which is a 45 ACP. It's a 45 caliber. This is the 9mm. Again, you can see it's a lot bigger. It's a fatter round, and it's throwing a big, this has got like a 230 grain projectile on the front of it. And so that's going to do a lot more damage, because heavier and faster are the two things that hurt, right? Force equals mass times acceleration. The mass of this is 230 grains. It accelerates pretty good. And so the 45 has a lot more stopping power. But moving along, if you want to dial up from there, so I loaded these myself. So I reload. I do a lot of shooting. This is a 357 Magnum. Comes out really hot. What do my specs here say? This is going to be coming out at almost 1,400 feet per second, 125 grain, jacketed hollow point, which is a hollow point on the bullet. This thing's going to do a lot of damage. These punch straight through at least one layer of cinder block, and they penetrate hard and a lot of stopping power. So that's an extraordinary increase in power just moving from this to this. So this has a lot less power than this does in terms of energy, foot-pounds, destructive power, stopping power, any way you want to look at that. All right, then if we move up the chain just slightly, I also reloaded these. These are for a 30-30, very classic deer rifle. Now we're starting to look at something that looks a little bit more like a cigar of some kind, right? So this is a 30-30, and let's see, this would be the 357 here. This has a lot more power. As soon as you move up to a rifle, it's like a whole, you're in a whole different universe. this 357 has decent stopping power. This has destructive stopping power, right? And so the 30-30 is not all that hot of a rifle round either. It's okay. It's put down a lot of deer in its day, but it's not quite as amazing as this. This is a 308, okay? So the 308 doesn't look all that much bigger, but if you look at it, it's got a fatter case, you know? It's got more powder in it. Same diameter bullet. They're both 30 cals, so you could put each of these bullets down. A 308 bullet will fit in a 30-30 rifle barrel. But there's just a lot more powder in this one, and so it just has a lot more punch to it. The 308 has vastly better terminal performance compared to a 30-30. A lot more power. So if we move up the chain just one more, I don't have a 30-06, so I don't have one of these rounds here, but I do have this because I shoot a 300 Win Mag, and this is the 300 Win Mag bullet. Now we're talking legit cigar. This thing is massively bigger than this 308 round here, okay? So this thing is really punishing to shoot. I've got a very light hunting gun. It's meant for the backcountry, so it only weighs 6.5 pounds. Shooting these cigars out of there, it's a memorable moment on the shoulder. This thing has unbelievably more power than the 308 does. And by the way, this is comparable to a 30-06. So I've shot a lot of these things. That's why I think I'm comfortable knowing about what they were going to do and when I'm seeing BS being tossed our way. All right. So we're going to get now into this next part, which is the experimental results from the pork roast. We're going to look at some. If you don't like seeing meaty things flying about, this may not be for you, but we are going to conclusively prove that Charlie Kirk's neck could not possibly have stopped a 30-06 round. And we'll be right back after this. Hi, I'm Dr. Chris Martinson. The news isn't just wrong. It's a lie, and it's costing you. Inflation's a freight train. Resources are vanishing, and they're still peddling the everything's fine story. Well, I'm done with it. As your information scout at Peak Prosperity, I rip through the web, reports, raw accounts to expose what's real. Energy crises, economic unraveling, all backed up by hard evidence. And I'll correct myself if I miss, but I won't stop. You're in the crosshairs of this mess. Subscribe now, see the truth, and fight back with me. All right, let's get into these experimental results. Here we have pork roast number one. So here's the setup. You can see the Xiaomi cameras over here. You're actually looking at the view of the GoPro 260 frame per second camera, which is the view we're seeing right now. This is roast number one, and behind roast number one on this beautiful shooting platform Nick built, so we can see exactly where the bullet went through, is one of these targets where when a bullet or anything punches it, it takes the black covering away, or the red, and it just exposes the fluorescent yellow underneath, so you can see exactly where it hit. So this is a fresh target. It's got no holes in it, and we're just going to start running this and see what happens here. This is before it's been shot, and it gets shot, and you're going to see this violence that happens to it. This was shot with a 150 grain full metal jacket round, punched through, and it just made an absolute livid mess out of that pork roast. Now, what's different from this to Charlie is that pork roast isn't being held below. It's not attached to a 200 pound body below, which would change the behavior somewhat. It's suspended on a wire, so how it behaves is going to be a little bit different, but that bullet went just straight through with extreme prejudice. You can see the hole back here that it made, and we'll get another look at that as we switch over now to the other camera. So now we're switching over to the Leica camera. And this one's operating at 460 frames per second. So we're able to get a really good view of what happens. And a beautiful, beautiful camera. It takes just stunningly good pictures. Boom. There's the actual bullet hole right there. The rest of this is because of the shock that's happened from all of the neck material, the pork material that got carried by that bullet and just blown out the back. And that's exactly what you would expect to happen if you were shot with this kind of a round, 150 grain 30-06 round. That's what it looked like. Now, we did this over and over again. Here's roast number two. This one's kind of instructive because when we watch this one get shot, here it hits right dead center in the roast, and it just, it just carries straight through. Just boom, nothing, absolutely nothing happens, just straight through. And that's another thing that can happen if the bullet doesn't deform at all, or this is full metal jacket, so it's going to really penetrate. By the way, Nick shot one of these 150 grain full metal jackets through a 15 inch solid beam, and it went punched straight through. So let's look at this one again right here. Watch that. You can watch, poof, just go straight through. Did you see that? It's going to punch straight through. One more time. Pew. Okay, one more time. Pew. Just straight through. That's that. And by the way, we shot a lot of these, and nothing more than this happened. Lots of holes just got made in them. Just went straight through. It got boring after a while. You can see that there were just holes that were punched straight in, so the bullets hadn't even mushroomed out. The boneless were unexciting. I think Nick shot 8 rounds and nothing ever happened. Just went straight through, and it was pretty unexciting. So you can see the hole there, and here's another hole here. So we kind of gave up on that. Nothing really was happening. So what if we hit the bone instead, right? So we want to take a look at this now, right? And you can see these little tiny holes up here. So now here's roast number 3. It's hit with 150 grain. Did we hit the bone on this one? I'd say no bone hit on this one, but let's take a quick peek, see what happens here. Boom. The shot went straight through. It also broke the wire that was holding it up. That's a 12-gauge copper wire that's wrapped around it. It snapped pulled the chain down that it was being hung upon, and just punched straight through. There's the hole right there. So we can see this from the other side. And yeah, that's what happened there. So let's go to the Xiaomi view really quick. Jump ahead. All right. So here we watch it. It gets shot right here. And bing, just comes straight through. And all of this yellow is taken off because it's sprayed bits of the pork roast back there. But the bullet itself just goes straight through to here. Just comes, makes a clean straight hole. Dink. So that's what you expect. So we watched this happen over and over again. So now we wanted to dial it up a little bit. And we have these roasts which had the bone in. This is 1.25 inch bone. A leg bone of a pig is a lot more dense than the cervical neck bones of a human. This bone has to hold a lot of weight. It's got a big, fat, 1/4-inch-ish wall around it, you know, before you get to the marrow. These are very hard bones, and they're solid, one piece. So you would think if anything was going to deflect this, here's what would happen. So now this was shot with 180-grain hollow point. The bone was hit. It was shattered. You see this huge hole that came out the backside here, and that's because the bullet came in, it probably mushroomed a bit, but the bullet went straight through, but it was carrying so much of the bone material with it that too punched through. This is a 1/2-inch oriented strand board, and it's just astonishing to watch this happen. So here we're showing that once it was shot through the bone, in this case, we could put a 1/4-inch dowel through and show that there was no deflection. Like, it didn't go up to here. It didn't bend like this. We didn't observe any deflection on any of these shots. Every single one, it went in the front, came out the back, and you could put a dowel through there for the ones where we were able to do that. Couldn't do that for all of them because it made such a mess of them, you couldn't quite figure out where was the hole. But you can figure out where the bullet entered, and you can figure out roughly what the hole was in the backstop. But man, these things blew giant holes out of the backstop. So it's kind of hard to get it exactly right. So now here we're going to watch a 220-grain bullet, which is a big, heavy thing, right? And look at the giant monster hole it made in the back of this. And by the way, Nick put a cinder block here to backstop it, because I just said, can anything stop these rounds? You know, what do we need? So he put a cinder block back there. And when you see it from the other side, we're going to be able to very clearly see what exactly happened. But in this case, we're shooting through a very heavy pork roast, much heavier than Charlie's neck. It's got a big bone in it. This one has a giant 1¾-inch bone in it. And boom. Wow. Great camera. So glad we have this. So now we know. It took this whole cinder block and shoved it. So just watch this happen again. From here. And the round enters and just absolutely goes through the roast, through the bone of the roast, through the back of the roast, through the Orienta strand board, and into the cinder block. And by the way, it pushes and shoves that whole cinder block backwards because these things are carrying just an enormous amount of force. Here's what happened. This front of that cinder block had a big old hole with a concave pattern because it was struck from this side. And the bullet actually did stop on the backside of the cinder block. So that's kind of what it takes to stop a 30-06 round. A whole roast with an actual leg bone in it and then a actual cinder block. And I don't think we recovered that round, so we're not clear. It might have turned to dust. Don't really see it laying around here, but maybe that's a fragment of it there. But something happened. But you can still see it's a fairly smallish, consistent sized bullet after it's done all of that damage. And by the way, it shoved that block 5¼ inches back. You can see here the enormous damage that was made with the ejecta coming out of the back of that roast, which probably included muscle, bone, gristle, whatever is coming out of that roast before that bullet smashed through the first line of the cinder block and carried on. So then here's just a variety of things we just shot over and over again. Spoiler, 38 shots were taken. None of them were stopped by any of these roasts. This one here is roast number 5. I believe this one has just been shot with a 220 grain. I think that's what this one is. I'd have to check the show notes again. And when it pulls back a little bit, you'll be able to see the massive hole that was made on the backside. So we don't have any evidence to suggest that Charlie Kirk's spine was in line with the shot or could have been in line with the shot from the place where they say Tyler Robinson was laying down or the subject was on the roof of the Losey building and took that shot. It could not have touched bone. But even if we did touch the bone, look what we see. Massive hole out the back, just blows straight through. If we were 40 more yards away, wouldn't make a lick of difference on this. And every single time from every angle, you watch that extreme violence that happened. The whole board gets pushed back. Massive holes shot, punched all the way through the OSB because of everything that bullet is pushing in front of it and carrying along with it as it makes its way downrange. Just absolutely astonishing. So again, shot after shot after shot from different angles with bones in the way, with you name it. Couldn't get anything other than this behavior, which was a straight through and through with just massive damage to the roasts. This is fairly typical here. And just a clean hole right out the back. In this case, you can see the hole right out the back here on this one. This one also broke the wire and took the whole thing down. Here, watch it from this angle. This, I believe, was a 220 grain. Look at the size of the hole it made in the backstop here. It's obscene how much power these things actually have, these 30-06 rounds. So, in an effort to get something to do something, all the roasts were stacked up and they were shot. And it turns out that the 220 grain went all the way through all three of them. The 180 grain went all the way through all three of them. And the 150 grain, we think, did stop in this one because all that Nick could find was some fragments of, could have been copper jacketing, all that. All right. So here's the conclusion from shooting the roasts. We shot 38 times at a variety of roasts. Unfortunately, we wasted some meat, but it's in the interest of science. We could not even remotely get anything to stop. The only time we think we could get a round to stop was after we went to about 20 inches of meat in a row, and it's possible that we did stop one of the rounds, but two others we did not. The 30-06 in common cartridges, you might just go to a store and say, hey, I'd like to buy some 30-06 rounds. It's probably going to be something between the 150 and the 180 grain. There's a lot of things in there. Could be a 165. Those are common. We tried a 220 just because maybe it was something weird that happens with a heavier grain. We're going to try something smaller, lighter, faster too, just to be complete. But if the FBI or Utah would just tell us exactly which cartridges they are alleging were used, that would be amazing, because then we could just settle down on that and run that experiment over and over again. Conclusion: not a chance in the world that Charlie Kirk's neck stopped a 30-06 round. Now we're going to move on and we're going to explain the t-shirt movements and the necklace breaking that we all saw in the Charlie Kirk shooting. Remember, we had in the earlier shows that I did, I noticed in one of them that we had this strange behavior where we saw Charlie sitting here. Here's right before he shot. This is the first frame of him being shot. This is blue outline of his neck area and t-shirt neck area, neck size. And that same thing has just been transposed and moved down. And you can clearly see his neck is bulging. The shirt is flying up and out. You can still see this microphone in both of them, which clearly indicates that the microphone did not explode or cause this behavior, because if it did, it wouldn't be in this frame. It would be 800 feet away, probably, because that's how fast explosions work. But you can see here even a little bit gap of light here. The t-shirt's been thrown up. It's like off of him. So, you know, you might look at that and interpret that as, oh, their t-shirts need to be puffed up. That would require air of some kind, because we're used to thinking in our speed, human speed. And so for something to be lifted off would require a force. And the force that we're familiar with is something like a puff of air. There's another force involved here, which is just the speed of momentum, which is once something is thrown in a direction. So if I took a t-shirt and expanded it really quickly, it's going to carry on traveling for a little bit further. That's my explanation for what we're seeing here. This is a massive overpressure event. Charlie's been shot and his whole body is now cavitating. It's a severe overpressure event. So if we want to watch it over and over again, just I think it's easier to see it in motion. You can see here, before the shot, after the shot. Before the shot, first frame after the shot. So you can see the swelling, the overpressure, obviously. You can also see motion of the t-shirt starting to move this way, right? It's kind of going up. So we wanted to see, can we explain this? What do we do? How do we possibly go about recreating this? So here's what we did. And by the way, the other thing I think we should account for here is seen in, I'm going to just turn off, I don't think we need the sound on this one. Yeah. So let's just watch this very quickly. This is right before the shot is taken. Charlie's going to answer the last question, and then the shot is taken. And what you see here, you see that the chain flying up off of his neck right there? Watch that. That chain flying up off of there is one of the things we observe. And the second thing we observe, and this is from a slightly different camera view, is this really strange behavior of the t-shirt. And so a lot of people have gone out trying to say, oh, well, that's clearly evidence of an explosion. It's evidence of something like that. We're going to show here that you can get this behavior just from the overpressure event of a high-speed rifle round going into a gel block that's designed to mimic a human form. So again, you see here this line, that's his chain flying off. So some people speculated, oh, the bullet must have hit his chain. We're going to show, nope, you don't even need that to get that behavior. That behavior's kind of easy to recreate, it turns out. So this is what we had, is a gel block. Nick and his family made this gel block to, you know, a neck area and a blob area to sort of mimic that. And we shot this from a variety of directions, but first we did put a chain around it and with a cross pendant on it. Not an exact match, because we only saw this the other day, but this is the cross that Charlie was wearing, and it's about the same size. Ours is dark, and this one's silver, and this one looks like it might be heavier, but as well, I don't know if that was the same chain, but we got a fairly heavy chain just to see if we could mimic that going on the safe side. So here's what we got. This now we're trying to answer the question, hey, how do we explain how a bullet stayed in Charlie's body, plus all this other behavior we saw, the overpressure event, because that's the only information we have. We have not seen the autopsy report. It's not been released. We haven't seen any x-rays of his body showing bullet fragments. We don't know anything. But we have heard through hearsay, somebody at TPUSA, I believe Andrew Colvett, said that the doctor told him, or somebody told somebody, maybe it was the coroner, that there was a bullet found near the T1, the thoracic one vertebrae, just under the skin. And whether that was a bullet fragment or a bullet, I don't know. But the point is that the bullet stayed in the body. Now, that is consistent with that severe overpressure event, because if the bullet just went hit here, it would have gone through and through, and it would have done a little damage, but not as much as if it's puts all of its potential energy down into the body. So here what we're doing is we're going to shoot down into the body. Nick is now up above, and he's shooting down into this block at something close to a 60-degree angle. Let's see what happens. Let's watch this together. That's what it looks like in real speed, right? So that's what you would see if you were just hanging around as a human watching this. That's too fast. What happened? That's the shot. It's over. Now let's slow it down. This is at 260 frames per second. This is frame one, frame two, frame three. You can already see that the chain is broken and out. Frame five. Oh, look, the t-shirt is now, it's now just independently flying away. Look at all this violence. It's hard to appreciate. Look at that necks elongating. This is what happens when 2,000 plus foot-pounds of energy is dumped into a 40-pound block like this gel block was. You can see all of this weird behavior. Here's the chain still flying around. This thing is still vibrating like crazy. We're now 18 frames in, so we're about a half a second into this at this point in time. Oh, no, it's 260 frames a second. We're just a fraction of a second in. Sorry. 26 will be a tenth of a second in. So, yeah, I think we're a tenth of a second into this whole thing, and that's what it looks like here. And you wouldn't have seen any of that in real time because our human eye just can't pick that up. Still flying around, and off it goes. Now let's look at it from the other way. Now we're going to be looking at it at there it is, kind of slow. But now we're going to look at this at dialing in one frame at a time at 460 frames per second. You can even see the bullet in. There's the bullet hole in the shirt. Look at this huge cavitation that started to happen here. Look at this big expansion. Does that not look exactly like what we saw off the back of Charlie's shirt? You can see here the chain is flying off, and this whole thing is now wiggling and waggling around. Wow, that thing just hopped in the air. I think shot number two, so we just set the whole thing back up again. The chain's been put back on. This is a fresh chain, so it's unbroken. The other one's broken. Fresh chain with a pendant. Put a t-shirt on there. And the block has already been shot once, so it's a little mangled. But this is the second shot. I think this one shows it even more clearly what we actually saw that day. So that's what it looks like in real speed. Wow, what happened? Hard to say. Let's watch that more slowly, frame by frame. First, second frame. Third frame. What is even happening in here? Fourth. Look at all the various weird things going on with the t-shirt here. You just saw a little bit of the chain. The chain, again, broke in this particular case. In fact, every single time we took a shot at this thing, the chain broke. So it's a very common thing. That was the most easily replicated thing we can see. You can see here even the pendant and is falling down and... frame one, two, three. Oh, look at that massive hole in there, that huge cavitation event. All that energy just has to go somewhere, and it goes somewhere super fast. Because again, water does not like to compress. That's why hydraulic lines work. So when all that energy goes in there, it has to go somewhere, and it just absolutely expands out in this massive cavitation event that collapses back in very, very quickly, just in a fraction of a second. That's why when somebody was shooting with 30 frames per second, cameras out in the audience, or possibly even shooting kind of the max for consumer grade, you might be shooting at 260 out there, but most people were shooting at 30 frames a second, they would have grabbed just one of these pieces. Here we're grabbing 400 slices. They might have grabbed maybe two or three slices out of that story. So we get to see a lot more now because, you know, we've slowed it down enormously. And by the way, this camera does a spectacularly good job of capturing this. We're seeing, again, all this weird behavior in the T-shirt. We're seeing it separate from the block below because of the momentum of it being thrown. We're seeing the chain break, and we're seeing the pendant come out this time and fall to the ground before this whole thing just falls off. Does that not almost perfectly match what we saw that day in the videos that we do have? It really does. This is extremely persuasive evidence to me that what we saw with that severe overpressure cavitation event in Charlie is explained by a high-speed rifle round coming into his body and dumping its energy into the body. Now we are going to look at a shot where it was just the neck only, just the neck only, because, you know, this, what if we shot just from the front, not dumping down in, because that's sort of testing our preferred hypothesis that for a round to have actually gone into Charlie's body and stayed there, it had to have been shot from a much higher angle if this is the entrance wound and it was a 30-06. But what if it was just shot from the front? What does that look like? So here's that shot. Oh, what happened? Again, I didn't see much. Did you see much? Nope. So here we are stepping through this frame by frame. Oh, you can see that. Oh my God. What is even happening here? Whoa. That's crazy. Look at all this crazy behavior you're seeing here. Again, with the bulging happening, I don't even know what happened. I can't believe that thing came back into shape at the end of all this. Like, that's bizarre. Now we get to see even more here because we're going to take this again at 460 frames per second. Look, there's the chain. It broke. Off it goes. But watch this. This is really cool how this one came out because the first frame captures the bullet. Pew! You can see the hole it makes right there. You can also see the ejecta out the back over here. You can clearly see all the violent gyrations that this gel block goes through here. It's pretty crazy. But what do we have now? All three cases we see, even if he was shot through the neck, there would have gone all the way through. Even when the bullet went straight and instantly through the neck, it still created a shockwave that cavitation was strong enough to break another chain in this case. And it was strong enough to create those T-shirt motions that we would have seen. This is now completely consistent with the idea that Charlie Kirk was shot with a high-speed rifle round. It dumped all of its energy into his body. But now we have to account for where that shot may have come from. Because at this point, I'm willing to tell you that it's about a 0.0001 chance that was because a bullet magically deflected off of the front of his throat and took a hard turn down into his body. Now here's why. Here's physics. So this is physics 101. When that bullet is first striking, it has something called angular momentum. It's progressing in a direction. It's got a vector that it's traveling along, and it's doing it with enormous force. Let's say we'll dial it back. It only has 2,000 foot-pounds of energy as it's traveling in this direction. To get it to go any other direction requires an equal and offsetting force. So if we want it to go this way, we're going to have to find a way to find, say, I don't know, 500 foot-pounds of pressure or 1,000. Something extraordinarily large has to be transcended there because bullets don't just magically go different directions just because they have to have a force acting on them, right? It's basic Newtonian physics. Anything going in a direction will continue until something acts on it, right? So at the point that bullet first touches his neck here, if it's coming from the 10-10 angle, it's going to go at least, I'm going to guess, a foot before it could even begin to think about heading in a different direction just because it's pedaled asymmetrically. It's mushroomed a little funny. You know, it's just going to have to, like a paddle in the water, it's going to find a new path. It can't do that within the first few inches. And the human neck's only, what, 5-6 inches across, right? At the point where it would have been shot here. So that's not even, it's 4 inches, right? Well, I am. He might have been 5. But that's not enough time for something with that much force to deflect. When we hear about bullets doing crazy things in bodies, right, which they do sometimes, they have to come at a very steep angle. Like, let's say this is a femur, and this bullet's ricocheting off the ground, and it hits the femur. Now it can travel along for a while if the angle is low enough, and it can do something. But if it's coming straight in, it doesn't just suddenly go like that. Because that's not how the physics here works. Anything that can cause a bullet to suddenly change direction is going to absolutely smash and shatter that bullet because the bullet's made out of lead. It's got a little copper jacket. It's actually a fairly weak thing You can take a hammer and smash these things flat. They're ready, willing, and able to deform very quickly, which is part of the why we use lead. It's dense and it's soft. Those two things give it absolutely awesome characteristics. But one thing a soft thing can't do is just change direction without getting mangled, if not completely splattered. So if you were wearing body armor, and a body armor did stop around with a ceramic or a steel plate, the worst problem you're going to have then is the splatter that's going to come up, because that thing is going to just completely turn into a ring of very sharp fragments traveling at a very high rate of speed. So you would have taken a large slug traveling at 2,000 feet per second, and you would have converted that into a whole bunch of little razor blades traveling outwards at maybe, I don't know, 1,500 feet per second at first. So that's why making body armor, you have to account for stopping the bullet, and you have to account for stopping the fragments that are going to result if you successfully stop a straight-on bullet like that, which is more typical orientation. So with all of that said, I think we've conclusively proven that a human neck would not actually be able to stop this in any way, shape, or form, and that the observed behaviors of Charlie's chain breaking and his t-shirt perfectly match a high-speed round coming in and creating all of this overpressure and doing what it's going to do in this situation. Let's just look at this one more time. I want to see this from the side angle. Start it from here. Boom. Look at that huge overpressure. Look at the t-shirt flying out. Hang on. I'm going to stop that at number three real quick. The bullet, you can see, comes in right there. Stop it on three real quick. Here you can see the t-shirt is clearly separated from the gel block, just like we saw in the case of that one frame of Charlie where his t-shirt was puffing out. And we could see that little bit of daylight over there. And the reason, again, this is so hard to see, it's too fast for the human eye. Nobody would even register it. But you have to have appropriate frame stopping technology in your camera to really see it clearly. Now, we're fortunate to have had all the video that we do have. Obviously, TPUSA really ought to be releasing any of the 4K high-def footage that they had on Charlie at the time, because when we analyze that, we can tell a lot. We probably would be able to tell pretty conclusively orientation and direction of the travel of the bullet if we could see, you know, was there any asymmetry in how things puffed out, what happened, you know, in that overpressure event. We'd be able to see things like that that could tell us a few things, hopefully. And of course, we'd love to have the autopsy reports too, because then we could tell even more, because we'd want to see the direction of travel. Now, one more nail in the coffin here of making the case that this wasn't an exploding anything over there. This wasn't a pistol. This wasn't something mysterious. It wasn't an exploding mic. Wasn't any of that. It was because we have to account for this. I haven't done a full audio analysis of the Kirk shooting yet, but enough to know that what we're looking at here is, as this is a wave file that came off of a video shot from just in front of where Charlie was sitting. And we can see some things. These are human voices down here in the spectrogram. This is frequencies. This would be high frequencies. This would be low frequency. This is the snick boom. This is crack thump, however you like to talk about it. The supersonic bullet gets to Charlie before the report from the gun. The snick or the crack is that supersonic crack because it's traveling faster than the speed of sound. So it has a little mini sonic boom, just like a jet traveling faster than the speed of sound will have a big sonic boom. So this is the sonic boom right here. And then this is the thump that comes afterwards. And this is what it sounds like. Hear that? This is very consistent with what we saw in the Butler shooting, where we had excellent, excellent audio because we had Trump's mics that we could work with, which gave us a perfect frame of reference for where the bullet and crack thump orientation was. All of these other ones are a little off to the side, so it's more complicated analysis. But you can clearly see that the snick has a lot up here in the high frequency range, and the boom has a lot of energy down here in the low frequency range. Very typical. Saw this all over the Butler spectrograms as well. So this is exactly what I expect to see with a snick in a boom. And this snick boom or this crack thump, this perfectly correlates with the exact frame time that Charlie is struck, and we see him go through his final moments. To account for this to be anything else, we would have to account for this. This is clear, 100% evidence that there was a high-powered rifle, or at least a rifle capable of pushing out supersonic rounds. How high-powered? I think that's a little bit of a guess, but based on the amount of overpressure cavitation we saw Charlie go through, it was a pretty high-energy round. Was it a .30-06? I don't know. I can't say at this point in time, but I can tell you that a supersonic rifle round was fired at exactly the moment that Charlie was struck by something. So that's, again, pretty strong, conclusive evidence that he was struck, he had an overpressure event, broke his chain, that whatever happened, that it was coincident with this. You'd have to explain how you have a crack thump that's exactly, perfectly, to within a millisecond, because that's as close as we can get on this, coincident with the video stuff that we saw. You'd have to say, well, then somebody shot a rifle, but it didn't, it just went into a brick somewhere or went into the ground. That's why they repaved it so quickly. And it exactly, that exact same 1/1000th of a second timing moment, something else happened. Yeah, this is Hollywood level stuff. To do that live in a live event seems extra, it seems superfluous, seems degree of difficulty is way too hard to me. So I can't make, until I get evidence that there's something else out there auditorially and I see nothing. By the way, saw this one. This was the crack thumps that we saw here from this video from the side. I had a variety of downloads from Twitter, and I also had one where I got the actual download of the high def shot of this from this side. And here again, we see the crack and the thumps. And what's interesting here is we have this thump is doubled here. I don't know why we have a doubled thump, but this looks like the crack. This is an echo of the crack because it matches. See how we have these two little high-frequency dots here, two here? So the crack would have come in lots of surfaces here, lots of very echoey surfaces. So the way I interpret this is there was the crack came in, and then there was an echo. And these are this is the thump of the rifle. I don't know why there's two of them. One explanation could be that those were picked up by Charlie's mic and put back out the speakers again, because we did have an artifact like that at Butler around Trump as well. And so again, we have a second recording that sees the crack thump here from the right side. Stephen Gardner had a friend who sent him this video. Stephen posted it to Twitter and then I downloaded it. Well, actually, I got it sent to me directly. But here again, we see this crack thump right here. Right here. Yep, there it is. Yep. So we have a crack thump there. And then from here, this one's interesting. This is shot all the way back up here. I don't know where their microphone is, so that's a problem for me. But again, here, they had a crack thump here with a very sharp crack right here. And then are these the thumps? Maybe, because they have that same double hump little thing, lower signature. I think so. But at any rate, point is, we have all this audio evidence from all over the place, different recordings, different everythings. And with Stephen Gardner's, this was actually came from somebody who hadn't been contacted by the FBI. Nobody had gotten a hold of their phone. There's no chance that somebody like snuck this audio feature in there and you know, unknowingly or something like that. So we have audio evidence from all over the place showing a crack thump, which means there was a high velocity supersonic rifle round shot exactly at the moment Charlie is struck by something. So I think that's pretty conclusive to me that he was struck with a high velocity round. There's a lot more we would have to do to figure out where maybe that came from. It's a very confusing situation. But as a point of reference, I did a lot of this work on the Trump Butler shooting. If you didn't see it, I had recordings from every one of these blue areas here. And if they are stretched out, it's because the person was moving at the time or moved a little bit. This is allegedly where the shots were taken from. This is where Thomas Crooks was found dead. There were five shots. There were three shots measured, and then there were five really, really fast shots. We measured out all the crack thumps and all that stuff, made tons of sense out of all that. But here's the bottom line out of this. This is unresolved still from the Butler shooting, and I'm really tired of this, where we're given like really concrete evidence, like, hey, can you shoot something, FBI, real quick and show us that somehow magically a 30-06 round can get stopped by a little pork roast or a human neck equivalent? Can you just show us how that's possible? At least, you know, that'd be awesome. But they don't ever bother. They just throw out this impossible stuff and say, yeah, that's just how it was, and you're gonna have to deal with it. This is the sonogram from the Trump shooting. This is from Source 4 camera. It was on the west side of the AGR building at the Butler complex. And the first three shots have these, this is the shot, but this is the echo, the shot, and this is an echo. So we don't have the crack thumps here because the camera is way over to the side and the shot is going downrange. So the supersonic bullet would not have traveled back to or given a report back to the cameras because the cone of that sonic snap was heading downrange that way, out of view. So what we do have is echoes. The first three shots go, and we can see these very clear echoes that were approximately 0.08 seconds. That's fine. There are surfaces out there. I can account for that. There's a hard surface. You get the shot and an echo. It happens. Weirdly, when you get into that next string of five shots in the Butler thing, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, they were very, very rapid. They had very, very rapid splits. They were super fast. They had echoes that were 0.17, twice as long, a little bit over twice as long. This is unacceptable. They're, like, you have to account for how did that happen? And if anything was even realistically normal in our world, if we didn't live in clown world, what would happen is the FBI would go there with a 223 in July and shoot three rounds, maybe, I don't know, just making stuff up here, with the rifle barrel over the crest of the roof line that Thomas Crooks was on, and then come back and shoot five more and show that you get this pattern of echoes. Without that, we have to account for the idea that these shots are taken from entirely different locations because they have entirely different echo signatures that come back off of them. Full stop. That's what we were left with. Nothing ever happened. It got dropped. Trump said he wasn't interested or he was satisfied with the outcome of it. So I dropped it because when your own president doesn't seem to care who shot at him or why, I guess that's the answer. But now it's Charlie Kirk. And this is different and it matters a lot. And we can't just let this go. So here's the conclusions from this part. First, a neck muscle only trajectory, hitting just muscle for a 30-06, absolutely through and through, 100%, extremely high confidence in that conclusion. Now with evidence, experimental evidence to back up that confidence. Two, there's virtually no chance even that a neck bone involved trajectory where it comes through and it actually hits the neck bone would have stopped a 30-06. High confidence on that because we got nothing but just through and throughs, whether we're using the 150 grain, the 220, the 180 grain hollow points or ballistic tips, straight through, just straight on through every single time. So high confidence in that. The gel block shots that were done recreated Charlie Kirk's shirt movements and also necklace breaking almost perfectly. High confidence now that a supersonic high energy rifle round killed Charlie Kirk and had dumped the bulk of its energy into his body, highly consistent with the idea that his body did stop a round. Now, the problem with that is you can't have done that with a 10-degree angle shot into his neck, 10-10. Couldn't have happened. The audio data we have from all over from that day is fully supportive of a supersonic round, almost certainly fired from a rifle. Very high confidence in that as well. But hypothesis then, to get a 30-06 round to stop in Charlie's body, as has been claimed, it would require a very steep shot into his neck area. Or possibly an exotic 30-06 round, or maybe it wasn't a 30-06 at all. In which case, the whole case against Tyler Robinson falls apart lickety-split. If Tyler Robinson's defense team is not interested in this data, doesn't adopt it, well then, the fix is in, as far as I can tell. Because this is just all you have to do in a court of law is institute reasonable doubt, right? If we can just instill reasonable doubt, it is completely unreasonable to suggest that a standard 30-06 round fired at a 10 degree angle down from 10 degrees off axis would have stopped in Charlie's body. You would have to show how that could be remotely plausible or reasonable. Until we get different data or we find out there were exceedingly exotic rounds being used, I don't know, frangible rounds. Maybe he had some exotic 110 grain, like, you know, ballistic tip things traveling at 3,700 feet per second, and that could account for it. I don't know, right? But the data we have right now says any typical 30-06 round you might use, not a chance in the world that that shot from that location would have just gone in here and dumped all its energy in Charlie's body. Zero. Just ain't going to happen. So that's the data we have. That's how I like to roll. And I just love experiments. I love data. I hope you got something out of this. But just remember, by the time you're looking at one of these bad boys here, there's not a chance in the world that this giant cigar of a round got stopped by Charlie's neck. Didn't happen. So thanks for listening. Let me know what your theories and hypotheses are, whether we missed anything. We're happy to go back to the range and conduct more tests now that we have all the equipment. And hey, that's who we are. That's how we roll. So with that, thanks very much for listening. Please come by peakprosperity.com to continue the conversation. Engage with me, my tribe, anybody who wants to talk about this, because we're in. We want the truth. That's who we are and why we do what we do. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.